Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Hey, welcome today, which is the 14th, and I hope you had a good 13th. I hope you got through it because there was a full moon also. But I have to tell you, Friday the 13th is one of my lucky days. It's a favorite day, and anybody that believes that's got to be a little bit incompetent. But anyway, we got a great show today, and I want to introduce our guest, the Saratoga Springs City Democratic Party Chairwoman, Sarah Berger.
Good morning, Sarah. Good morning. Good morning, Rick.
And we have the first vice chair of the committee, or the commission, Eddie Abraham. Good morning, Eddie. How are you? Sarah, we've got a couple of things to talk about, but first, I think we want to touch on the Me Too movement. And I think that you've got some good information on that, and let us go.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rick. I hope everybody can hear me okay.
Well, we can hear you. Your lines are pinning here on
Excellent.
The board.
Excellent. Yeah, so as you know, Rick, I'm an attorney, and I primarily represent clients in labor and employment law matters, including discrimination, retaliation, among other areas, employee discipline, collective bargaining, et cetera, both in the Capital Region of New York and in my office in Boston, Massachusetts. And I'd say that we probably started looking at the Me Too movement, at least in the Capital Region and in Albany, very closely at the beginning of 2018. Now, as an attorney, I am also a member and on the executive committee of the National Employment Lawyers Association, the New York chapter, and a member of their legislative committee. And the legislative committee of NELA, it's commonly called NELA, NELA New York. And we have spent the last 2 years really focused on where we feel there should be some much-needed changes in the law. And this year, as I think I had shared with you previously, Rick, we were successful in working with the legislature and the executive in passing the most sweeping legislation that New York has passed in many, many years to address sexual harassment as well as other forms of discrimination.
I think that's been going on for 200 years, too. But I think women today being more emboldened in being in the workforce and having a say in government, I think, are coming forward now, don't you think, than in past years?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think that that's been part of the issue, and that's part of what the legislation was hoping to address, is to give victims and survivors a path and an avenue to be able to feel comfortable in reporting, because that is, it's the underreporting and people being fearful of retaliation that has caused many folks not to report, or misinformation, being told, well, you don't have anything, or that's nothing, or, you know, I think we've done a lot to even just change attitudes, and just being able and feeling comfortable to discuss these types of issues it goes a long way. And I think those discussions in Albany, at least, have been really remarkable in the last 2 years, starting with the Legislative Women's Caucus in February 2018. I myself spoke. There were representatives of many different industries. Of course, I'm speaking from the perspective of an employment discrimination attorney, but we had people from education, from school districts, locally, different social services organizations that help victims of domestic violence. So we really covered a broad spectrum there and had a very productive conversation with representatives of the governor's office. And that really got the ball rolling. And then from that point forward, the governor had introduced through his budget some proposals to address the issue. Some were passed in 2018, and then this year was when we really the momentum kicked up tremendously. And I would like to give large credit with respect to the momentum and energy that we saw in Albany this year to a group of women that call themselves the Sexual Harassment Working Group. And this group of women are absolutely fantastic. They are all former employees of the state legislature, and they all had their own individual experiences with harassment and workplace issues working for the state legislature. And then they banded together and decided they needed to do something about it. And they've worked tirelessly to see the change that could improve the workplace in New York State had been made. And I think they were effective in doing so. And we worked very closely with them at NELA New York. And it's been really incredible. And I think a lot of what was able to be achieved this year was in large part due to their efforts.
Mm-hmm. Was any provision in any of this? I know you've worked hard on this for years, but has there been any provision in any of these laws that were passed to get help for women or men? I mean, if it's a very, very minor percentage of men, but help in the way of dealing with sexual abuse in the workplace, like for mental health or social workers to kind of help them through getting over the problem? Because I'm sure just reporting it doesn't end there for women.
No. Mm-hmm. No, it's not about just reporting. The laws that we worked on, and like I mentioned it being an avenue or a path, affect the ability of the victim survivor to be able to challenge the adverse action. Let's say, for example, an employee reports to HR that they feel they've been discriminated against, and then the employer 2 days later fires the employee, right? So the act of reporting it under the law is considered protected activity. The employer taking action against them is arguably retaliation because of the employees engaging in protected activity. So the law then says, okay, if that happens and an employee makes a complaint either to the New York State Division of Human Rights, which is an administrative agency in New York State that investigates and adjudicates discrimination claims, or to the court, because you can sue your employer for harassment or for that retaliation, that retaliatory act, and you can seek as part of that compensatory damages for mental anguish, humiliation, mm-hmm. distress. You can seek your back wages. You can seek your front pay. And now in New York, under the new law, you can also seek your attorney's fees as an available remedy, and you may also seek punitive damages. Both attorney's fees and punitive damages were available and have been available as a remedy under federal law, whereas they were not until the passage of this new law in New York State available in New York, which is we were way behind the times, so to speak, with many aspects of our human rights law. We just became really a forerunner in the area of discrimination law with one major aspect of the new law, and that is New York State changed the standard that applies to harassment claims in the workplace. Under federal law, and this is a phrase, and this is a legal term of art, okay, that I'm going to try to very quickly educate us all on.
Well, that's good.
That gets thrown around in the workplace and commonly now on the street, so to speak. It's become part of our language because we've been talking about it so much the last couple of years. And that in of itself is such a big deal, I think, to many of us that work in this every day because, anyway, so the standard under federal law and state law prior to recent was that an employee would have to prove that the conduct was sufficiently severe or pervasive to permeate the workplace. Now, that's quite a bunch of words. What do they mean? Well, it can mean a lot of different things. And what we found as practitioners was that it was not being applied consistently by the courts. And we had decisions for cases where a woman even was groped and the court was dismissing it, saying that that wasn't sufficiently severe or pervasive. It wasn't pervasive enough. And that, too, I think most people strikes us as not the right outcome. And so when we looked at the legislation in New York and said, well, what would be better? New York City has a standard that they've been working under for the last approximately the last decade. And that's the standard that we, in essence, went to. And what that allows for is for an employer as an affirmative defense. So if, let's say an employee accuses an employer or says that they were subjected to harassment in the workplace. The employer then has to prove, okay, well, that harassment is just a petty slight or trivial inconvenience. Okay, so which is a lower standard than the sufficiently severe or pervasive. And we found also much easier to apply. So New York courts have been applying that standard for, like I said, about a decade now. And it seems to, you know, it has not resulted in all the businesses in New York City folding up and closing down, but it seems to be more consistently applied. So we were able to successfully in New York eliminate that federal standard, that higher threshold, and put in place the law as it is in New York City statewide, which is really great. And this is also great because it's not a new standard. It's not made up. It's not something that no one's done before. We at least have the courts of New York City, the appellate division, first, second departments. We have some appeals decisions in the New York state courts already interpreting that standard. And we believe it works better. And now it applies statewide. And I think that was the real significant groundbreaking piece of our legislation. So I think New York deserves a huge pat on the back. We had phenomenal sponsors in the Senate and the Assembly. Freshman Senator Alessandra Biaggi from the Bronx and Assemblywoman Arevalo Simotas were our sponsors on our legislation, which was incorporated into an omnibus bill that included some other protections and passed and became law in New York this year.
Now, I'm a layperson, and I really don't know much about any one topic. So when I ask you these questions, take them with a, you know, don't think I'm challenging or anything, but educate me. Prior to women and today of being in the workforce, I'm going to use the term more prominently than in the past. There was an equal amount, or if not more, sexual abuse or harassment for women in a marriage. And I think that was always held in the background also until probably like the 70s maybe, when women, you know, they had more social programs in place to help women, and you know, they were more apt to leave the husband or whatever. Do you see the Me Too movement helping that situation out also, making more women emboldened to come out and say things because of the laws that have been passed for employees in the workforce?
Absolutely. I mean, these are major societal changes, I think is what you're describing, which have taken place probably much over the last 50 years in the U.S., the post-World War II era. And absolutely. I mean, I think we, in being able to have these conversations and hopefully continuing to have conversations like this, like the one we're having right now, men and women will feel more comfortable approaching an employer, approaching the authorities, or whatever the case may be, to report incidents when they happen, or to make changes in their own lives to get away from, you know, either you're holding a perpetrator accountable or you're somehow making a change to get away from a situation and feeling empowered and able to do so. And I think the more we have the discussions and provide resources and places to go. Like, for example, in Saratoga, we have a local social services organization called Wellspring. And Wellspring assists victims of domestic violence and assault and helps them find whatever services they may need. And I think helping to promote organizations such as that is really vital. And in fact, they have an event coming up on November 7th at Longfellow's from 6 to 9 p.m., and it's called Girlfriends Helping Girlfriends. They have started promoting the event on Facebook and are seeking sponsors, and that's something that I hope that the Saratoga Springs Democratic Committee will also contribute to, because we did pass at our August 27th meeting, which was my birthday, by the way, a resolution regarding the Me Too movement. And our resolution, I think we did a fantastic job as a group. Eddie was helping me too to edit the resolution and kind of decide. We decided how we wanted to frame it, and we sought input from everyone at the committee, and then we voted on it. We discussed it, voted on it at the meeting, and now and that's a wonderful thing. And all of our endorsed candidates have supported it. But a resolution is words on a paper, so we need to, you know, put our words into action a little bit, and put our money where our mouth is. So if we can raise some money to help this Wellspring event, I'm hoping we can do that, and that's going to be on my agenda next Saturday.
Sure, that's great. And the next Saturday is your committee meetings?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, we have our September meeting at the public library. Hopefully we will not have any more endorsement meetings this year. I had told the press we are closed, we are done. It was unusual this year to have two meetings in August, but we had to.
Needed them, yeah. And we'll probably touch on that a little bit when we get into your role as the newly appointed chairwoman, but getting back to the Me Too movement, the word Me Too movement, was that a result? I mean, I'm sure work was going on behind the scenes, and I know some aspects of, I mean, not the same things we're talking about now, but a different aspect which relates to this is your friend Bridie Farrell.
Oh, Bridie Farrell.
Bridie Farrell. I'm sorry, Bridie. Because those were cases of sexual abuse that were kind of pushed under the carpet or not spoken about. And
correct,
and
yeah.
They were trying to get a law passed for years and years and years.
Oh, yeah.
And that finally did pass,
that's right.
Correct?
The Child Victims Act, yes.
Okay. The name Me Too, did that come about when Bill Cosby and Harvey Weinstein were doing their thing? Is that when that title Me Too movement started?
No. Okay. The Me Too movement, and actually we were careful to also, we wanted to speak in our resolution to the history of the Me Too movement, and we did put in a couple clauses where we said this, because we felt it's really critical to have an understanding of where the Me Too movement came from. And it initially was founded in 2006 by Tarana Burke, who was a civil rights advocate, and she began using the phrase Me Too to raise awareness of the pervasiveness of sexual abuse and assault in our society. And then over the years, it really began to develop into a much broader broader movement, mm-hmm. and has brought us forward to where we are today. And Eddie, if you want to jump in here at any point, I'm sorry if I'm hogging the microphone.
That's your role as an attorney.
So,
Eddie, if you ever have anything to say, jump in. I mean, you know, just push her out of the way and grab that microphone.
We're still sharing a mic over here on this side of the table.
I know,
table.
It's terrible.
Come on,
even on my podcast, I have four microphones, you know?
I mean, it's
I know,
right?
So it was early that it happened, and I think a lot of people really weren't paying much attention to it back then. I mean, the people pushing it for reform knew about it, but I think the lay people, average citizen, really wasn't thinking about this.
Yeah, I think what got publicized the most, it was, you know, the Harvey Weinstein scandal and the report, the tremendous investigative reporting that was done by the New York Times reporters, Jody Cantor and Megan Twohey. Like, that really then, I think, got it out in the media a lot more,
right,
which is what I think has helped the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Get louder. And,
sure, more high-profile cases.
Yeah, but it actually went back before that, which is, I think, important to recognize mm-hmm. what it was about initially.
No, that I agree with you there. And can you address out of the workplace incidents a little more? I know the workplace is your forte because of your practice. You're involved a lot in not only harassment cases, but on a multitude of law cases. But you mentioned Wellspring.
Yeah.
Are there more help centers like that popping up across the state to help women? I know you may not know this as a fact, but do you see more people getting involved in helping the women or men that have been either abused or discriminated against in the workplace?
I don't know about social service organizations per se, but I'm hopeful as an executive committee member of NEAL in New York that we are, you know, making efforts and able to increase our membership and get more attorneys involved in wanting to practice in this area of law, and young people as well. I mean, I hire recent law graduates as law clerks. I actually just brought a young lady in who graduated last December from Brooklyn Law School and has a little fire in her belly for these things. And I think that's important that we pay it forward and help educate our younger folks and get them involved and find ways for them to be involved, like mm-hmm. and know that they can make a career out of it. I mean, there are only a handful of attorneys in the Capital Region that really devote their practice to this area of law, and I'm one of them, and like literally a handful. I can count them on one hand, and there is so much work. It's unbelievable. My phone rings like all day, every day. I have a person that works for me that all they do for me is sit there and answer the phone and help process intakes and potential client calls, because I just, between my cell phone, social media, I mean, people have issues. I mean, of course you do. Things happen in the workplace constantly and you need to know where to go. So I'm hopeful we can really try to promote through our profession people to take this on.
Right. Well, we were talking before the show about this happens so much that and people say, or men and women in the workplace say, well, we realize this happened, so we're going to try and do better. And I think there has to be a system in businesses that take this seriously enough to look into it more and just say, well, that's not really, like you had mentioned before with businesses, that's not really that important, so we'll just kind of gloss over it. So I think with more people reporting to attorneys, because basically that's how you have to get somewhere today. I mean, you know, it's word for your word against my word, basically, unless you have proof to go to an attorney.
Well, that's right. And the attorney fee provision that I spoke of earlier, and the fact that a plaintiff may be able to seek recovery of their attorney's fees is really important to that issue, and because that is an access to justice issue. If you can't hire an attorney or can't afford, I mean, how many people that have lost their job and they've been fired now can go pay a lawyer by the hour, you know, $200-$300 plus an hour to fight for them? Like, that doesn't happen very often, but somehow I make a living doing this. So, and that's because of the attorney fees provisions, because it helps to level the playing field and it gives the victim survivor access to justice.
And that's a good sign. because by you having someone answering the phone, and maybe and this is increasing, it shows a sign that women are comfortable in coming out. And because, you know, I mean, like I said, you go back to the beginning of time, this probably happened with women being discriminated or abused. I remember reading, and this is sad because you go back to the time of movie producers or directors, and I read a biography on Samuel Goldwyn from MGM, and he was from Gloversville via Poland, but I mean, he was a leather person in Gloversville and ended up, Otto Preminger got him to go out to Hollywood with him and start making movies. And in the book, it devoted like two chapters to the closed door meetings at lunchtime with Hollywood starlets.
Yeah.
And you know, even back then, this was a well-known topic, but nobody did anything about it. And I think that goes to show the plight of women before, I think, maybe the 60s, mid to late 60s, that they were a second-class citizen, that anything they said wasn't to be believed, because this was rampant in a place like Hollywood, which, I mean, you know, Hollywood is Hollywood, but that women had to do that to get ahead. And that's kind of sad and sick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, actually, your observation that women have been second-class citizens for a long time, I think, is very apt. It's important to remember that, you know, it hasn't been that long since women have been able to vote, for example. It's been even more recently that women were allowed to operate independently financially. Mm-hmm. Like, women were not allowed to get a credit card without a cosigner until the 70s, right? That's not that long ago. There are people alive today who still remember those times. So there is a lot of progress that we've made, and there's still a tremendous amount of progress that we have to make. And supporting women, supporting survivors through legal action in the workplace, I would also pitch in for unions. I would say that, like, a stronger union movement that is focused on these issues would also be a huge help. And the support services that you mentioned, those are all, for the most part, government-funded in one way or another. And those organizations are pretty strapped most of the time. Like, it's mm-hmm. not like they're rolling in money. They're struggling to provide those services to the people who need them. Like, people are banging down Sarah's door looking for legal help. Those are the people who can afford it, who have the connections to do that. That's the tip of the iceberg. Like, there are so many other people out there who don't have access to those services or who can't pay for them, who need state support, essentially. We need government to step in and fund those services at an adequate level.
And I mean, as a proponent of less government, a smaller government, this is one area that I see as government getting more involved, because, as you said, local organizations can only do so much with, I mean, you could have a big fundraiser, but that doesn't really go too far, because you have to pay a staff who generally makes less money than the job calls for.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely.
Really, I mean, these organizations are strapped, too, on how much they can
do. And not every
do.
Community is Saratoga.
Right.
I mean, I think we really do a fantastic job here as a community of being active and getting involved.
Oh, most definitely. And I think when you alluded to the fact, Sarah, of help with the attorney's fees for people, you want them to come forward and not be afraid, I can't afford this. But,
right.
You know, I'm just glad that this is coming to the forefront. And, you know, it's like anything else. I, being married to a school teacher who's retired now, but, you know, incidents with school teachers are, as you probably know, if an accusation is made, I mean, the teacher's removed immediately, not fired, you know, put into desk work. But there, too, it's... there's a process that they have to go through to make sure that I think because you're dealing with children, number one, it's a worse situation. And number two, a child can say something that may not be correct because the teacher could be giving her bad marks or him bad marks. But you have to take every accusation seriously. You can't say, right. well, you're just saying this because you don't like your boss or whatever. And I think you have to continue to go through with this. I mean, this is a serious issue that always has to be talked about. It can't be dropped, because once it is, then people forget it. Mm-hmm. And you're going to need another high-profile case. And they may not come along anymore like they did, like these last two did, because I think people are being a little more careful, even though they're doing the same thing. They're trying to cover their tracks a little better. So you got any other things in the hopper as far as what the state's doing?
Well, I think I'm hoping that Neil in New York and the Sexual Harassment Working Group will continue where things left off. I mean, I think there we did not get our entire bill into the omnibus bill that was ultimately passed and became law. There were some things that didn't make it for a lot of different reasons, but I'd like to see us continue to look at the issue and keep having these discussions.
Okay. Well, you know what I'd like to do now? I want you to insert your...
I'm buying
that. I was doing sign language there for a minute, so I don't know if you could see that or not, but I want to switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
And we can get back to this, because I want you to mention the girlfriend to girlfriend or helping girlfriend thing before the end of the show, so that people can get involved in that. Let's get to your other hat. You've got so
Which
many.
Hat?
You've got so many.
I have a lot of hats.
You've got a lot of hats. I want to talk about the election season that's coming up. And, you know, you had a little, I say things and it's not the right thing to say. It wasn't a, problem in the party, but a schism, but you had some people that couldn't play the way they should have played. You were the executive committee of the Democratic Party in the city had walked out of their positions because they didn't agree with a primary vote, which to me, when you belong to a party and you have a primary, the primary winner is the winner. And in any case, they resigned, as did some of the members of the committee. And I think that was a good thing from looking on the outside. And the reason why are some of the people on that committee, I know, maybe weren't working as hard anymore that they should have. But in any case, I think appointing a new committee with you as a chairwoman and Eddie as the first vice chair strengthened the committee and got it back into focus, where I think they lost a little focus before. What are you feeling about that? And you had made a comment that the endorsements are done and it's over. Tell me what's been going on since you've taken over as chair.
Sure. Well, you're correct. We did have a group of committee members that resigned and left the committee. I think from what I could tell, they felt conflicted because I don't really know why. I got to be honest with you. I'm not. I get so mixed up in what I can't really speculate about what they did, but they're gone. And I guess they support the incumbent commissioner. But I saw an opportunity for us to move ourselves forward, do things differently, do things outside the box, be creative. And I think we were somewhat stifled in the past and not able to really, there was many of us that wanted to do things differently, that wanted to talk about local issues and be able to vote on resolutions and be engaged more in the community and, and have greater voice, and felt that we just didn't have one because we were told, you know, what to do and what to think and what we're going to vote on and what we're going to discuss. So in running for chair, I wanted to change some of that. I mean, you have to be practical. I mean, when you look at this organization, you have, when we're at full capacity, we have 50 members. Okay, so 2 members for each voting district in the city of Saratoga. That's a lot of people with a lot of different opinions in one room at the same time. It's tough to manage, right?
Yes,
it can
it
be. And so you need to be organized because there is work to be done for the committee. And that is not lost on me at all. However, with that said, I think there's a balance. And I think we needed greater transparency. I personally took issue with some behind closed doors dealings when it came to the executive committee making decisions about money and not being forthcoming with those decisions, and either those decisions or just putting it up for the full committee to vote on it. I mean, when you're spending, you want to fundraise money and you want us to give money back, give money to the committee. Well, I want to know how it's being spent and I want to be part of the decision making process. And don't think that's unreasonable.
No.
So, you know, that's something that we're aiming to change. Right now we have a lot of appointments to make, or we can make. I mean, so we have these vacancies, right, that were created by the people that resigned, and the committee chair and chair of the county can make appointments to fill those vacancies for the rest of the term, and then next year those members could petition to get elected themselves. So we're sort of filling a gap. I mean, we've made several appointments already. There's some more that we can make, and we're looking to diversify the committee body a bit, bring in people from different professional and backgrounds and different demographics, and some union people. We didn't have anybody that worked for a union on our committee previously. We do now.
Yeah.
Things like that.
You said that the county Democratic chair can make appointments?
It's officially approved by the county chair, the vacancies are. So what happens is I make a recommendation to the county chair. The county chair is the actual person that officially appoints to a vacancy, because we are de facto members of the Saratoga County Democratic Committee in our role on the Saratoga Springs Democratic Committee.
Well, I know that, but I wouldn't want any county person telling me how I should run my...
Well, I will say that's fair, and that I will say that is not typically an issue.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good.
And that would be bad for a county chair to do. If a county chair did that, they probably wouldn't stay as county chair for much longer.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I believe city issues should be decided by the city, whoever, but... All right. And Eddie, as far as becoming vice chair, how do you see yourself becoming more of a prominent role in the party? I mean, I know you've been very active in the past, so.
I think that the main thing that I'm excited about is, you know, when you get into the room with the people who are on the committee now, there is a palpable sense of excitement and optimism about the future. People are really interested to tackle large projects, sort of ambitious projects, which were frankly not encouraged before. So I'm looking at a bunch of different things that we could be doing that would sort of reinvigorate the committee and bring in new energy and increase our capabilities and our ability to properly represent the Democratic Party in the city. So we're looking at larger fundraising initiatives. We're looking at reaching out to rank and file members more and getting their feedback and getting their participation. We are looking at trying to support community organizations that align with our values. So, I think the idea of donating to Wellspring is a really good example of that. We as Democrats, really value the same things that Wellspring values, and we want to support that. So we want to find ways that we can work together to do that. So those are some examples of the things that I've kind of suggested, and Sarah's been pretty receptive to, and frankly, the whole committee is excited to start working on.
Okay, that's excellent. And do you find that having the same, being able to discuss with the chairwoman your ideas, that you should be on the same page? I mean, debate is never bad, believe me. I think you should create a good debate, because you can learn something from a person you're debating with, and you come to more of an agreement than you a disagreement most of the time. Mm-hmm. So do you find yourself in the same wavelength as Sarah on most issues, and you work well together?
We're still right at the beginning of our working relationship, but I do feel like we were getting together fairly well. We're aligned. We're both Democrats, so, you know, most of the disagreements that Democrats have are over that, you know, small slice where people don't agree. We're
right.
really good at finding that slice where we don't agree, but frankly, most Democrats do agree on 80-90% of the issues, right? And I agree with you that I think debate is very important. One of the things that is essential to a productive debate is a mutual respect and a commitment to professionalism. You have to understand that, you know, if you want to state your position frankly, and if you want your ideas to get a fair hearing, you have to be willing to let other people do the same. And then you have to respect that your position will not always be the one that comes out on top, right? And that's something that we definitely see people struggling with, and it's not just, you know, within the Democratic Party. It's a general phenomenon that people can't seem to let go of their own egos long enough to get into an agreement with someone who they agree with on most things.
Right.
So what I found is that in the last couple months, it's only been 2 months since this sort of new state of affairs has come about. But in the last couple of months, I've found a very refreshing level of professionalism on the committee as a whole, and a willingness to state frankly what you want, what position you want the committee to take, what action you want the committee to take, and for that to be debated frankly and for the results to be respected. And I think that that's a really positive sign for our committee and for hopefully politics in the city in general.
I hope so. I just want to mention you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM, Skidmore College Radio, and the phone number, if you'd like to call in, 518-580-5783. That's 518-580-5783. You know, just to go to your point, Eddie, I think what's happened over the last... I've been around a long time, and I see in the last maybe 30, 35 years or so, what's been happening in our country is that people can't debate. We're taking too many "I'm right and you're wrong," and it's really affecting the country. And before that, it always seemed like, you know, even though you disagreed, you could come to some sort of, you know, mutual understanding. And like you said, you may not always come out on top, but you live to fight another day. Because I always remember my father was a councilman, and they'd go in, and the two sides would argue like heck during a council meeting. Then they'd all go out for a drink after,
yeah.
And they'd be buddies.
Yeah.
And that's what you, I mean, not that you should yell at each other at the council table, but disagree, but you're stay friends. Now, to your point, Sarah, I see nothing with what's happened. I mean, what caused a lot of this trouble? And in a way, I'm sad to see it, but in a way, I think it's a good thing because you got new blood. And both, I'm an independent, I'm a no party, so... you know, I don't have a stake in saying anything about either parties, but when a party ages out, and this happens in everything, I was in a church organization that the older people wouldn't let the younger people even state their opinions. But when a political party ages out, that's not good for the party because they get more set in their ways. And I think primarying is good. I mean, you primaried a sitting commissioner. And although you didn't make it, I think you brought out topics that weren't discussed by that commissioner. And, I mean, that was a good thing. But you didn't leave the party because you lost the primary.
No, I didn't.
Stayed in and you strengthened it.
No,
to
I didn't.
Point.
But I will say this: that I mean that it's an interesting example because we're not used to, really not used to primaries in Saratoga. We've had them. It's not that we haven't had primaries. We've had primaries. But I think the demographics of our voting community and our city at large have been changing dramatically and quickly. So I ran in 2015. Democrats did not have a majority in the city in 2015. That has only happened in the last 2 years. And that's quick. I mean, this is a community in a county where the Republicans controlled for ever.
Well, I mean, as far as the Indians. Yeah,
yeah, pretty much. So that's, you know, there's a lot of local change. A lot of people moving into the community that are Democrats. Your younger population, I think, tends to
getting
be Democratic.
Smarter.
Getting smarter.
Well, getting smarter about politics, not afraid to state their opinions, as
yeah.
Eddie said. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, I view, I've been on that committee for nearly a decade, and a lot of the people that resigned were workers, and they're Democrats and people that really did care and do care about Democratic issues. So I was frankly kind of sad to see a lot of them go, mm-hmm. you know, and I didn't really feel like it was necessary either. And I can understand, you know, who you vote for is your business. If you want to go in the voting booth and you want to vote to support the commissioner, the incumbent, then that's what you do. And that's your business.
Right.
I think it was, you know, perhaps they felt they just couldn't support Patty Morrison. You know, they just don't want to work for her, and they felt that they would have to. I mean, but even this always happens, so that's why I'm not sure why now this year
right.
it was necessary to resign over it.
Right.
But I think it's because it was the opposite way. Like
yeah.
What would have happened if I had won? You know,
right.
would there have been mass exodus 4 years ago? I mean, I don't know. But, you know, I think their person this time lost, so they left.
Right. And, you know, I think in a situation like that, only from my perspective, is there could be repercussions from this and the way people are going to vote. I mean, myself, if you can't play within your party, and like you said, go to the ballot box and settle it. Instead of leaving, well, that's creating a little bit of a rift because you can't debate, you can't get along together. And that, I always say, just like there was a council one time that argued constantly, and you do that behind closed doors. You put a unified front out to
yeah,
the people.
I mean, that's what's in the party's best.
I mean,
You
know, I don't know.
Well, here's the other issue. We still have, so the incumbent is running.
Yeah.
Right? So we have a race on our hands for November.
Right.
And she's running on third party lines,
yeah.
endorsed through, you know, the Wilson Pakula cross endorsement. I don't know if she's still a registered Democrat or not, but assuming she is, these are all cross endorsements. And instead of stepping aside after the primary, she's running on third party lines. And is that her right to do? It is. I mean,
yeah.
it's legal for all of this, at least this year. I mean, I'm hoping the state legislature, to be honest, is going to do away with fusion voting and this cross endorsement process, because to be honest, I think it creates a lot of confusion for voters, and
I think it creates a process like happened this year with the person in charge of that party had accusations made. You know, that may not have been right, but that's what happens, I think, in this case. I mean, you have a Democrat who's now an independent.
Well, it happens all the time.
I know.
It happens all the time. You have the smaller parties that are able to just give their lines to whoever they want. And that's not a decision of the public. That's not a decision of a voter. That's a decision of a party chair that in many cases is self-anointed. I mean, these, some of these smaller parties have lines on the ballot that quite frankly shouldn't. I mean, the Serve America movement is one example. There is not a single registered voter in the city of Saratoga Springs. And I'm not sure if there is in the state of New York at all. There wasn't, as of, I think, February of this year, registered with that party. So we have no one registered with that party, and two candidates, since I think at least two candidates in Saratoga running on that line, and the incumbent finance commissioner is one of them. So it's like, well, that's, you lose a primary where the voting public, and I know it may have been it was close. I'm not, I don't dispute that.
It was close.
It was close. However, she lost. Patty Morrison won. So now, and that was a decision of the voters. It was put in their hands, and it was up to Patty Morrison. Like her or not, people can have whatever opinions they want. It was up to her to bring her people out. And she knocked doors and pounded pavement and did it. She did it. And I think it took the incumbent commissioner by surprise, to be honest with you. I think she thought she had it in the bag. And that's part of the problem, you know, I think. So now we have this race in November with third party lines, and it's, and I think it was, you know, it is what it is.
Well, and you know, and I do want to get into this, because if Patty's listening, I don't want her to think that we're saying, you know, she beat Michelle Madigan just because she beat Michelle Madigan. I think it was one of the largest turnouts of a primary vote. Because as you know,
the largest.
Because primaries usually don't attract voters.
It's very hard.
It is.
That was the only thing on the ballot.
Right.
So literally anyone going to the polls that day was going out to vote in the Commissioner of Finance race.
And I also think that, as you said, she won. And I think her message resonated with voters. So she's not a person that's just running to overthrow an incumbent. I mean, she has a message that I think is a good message. And, you know, and people liked it. And the key for people, candidates, is to knock on doors and explain that one-on-one to people or in a small gathering. And she did that. And I you know, wish her all the luck in the world. But what I wanted to ask you was, you had made a comment that there's not too many primaries in Saratoga. And I'm going to put this in. I honestly think it's because the form of government we have. Somebody doesn't want to run because they can't put enough time in. That's why I think the increase in salaries that they're talking about is ridiculous. But anyway, I think if we change the form, and I think what you had alluded to before, that we have more knowledgeable people that are moving into Saratoga, or the younger people that see how the form of government operates in Saratoga. That's why we only lost by 10 votes out of over 9,000 casted the last time. I think it's time for people to get into politics without being burdened with the responsibility of running a department, that they can just be the legislative branch as a council person.
Oh, absolutely. It is so hard to find candidates to run for these seats. And that's, you know, that's been an ongoing issue for a long time. We're always out there, I feel like, as a committee begging people to run, because it is a big responsibility. And you could, I mean, any of these positions, I mean, it is true. You could work 100 hours or more a week. You could spend that time. Like, you have to have, the key to success is having a fantastic deputy commissioner. And we've had some really incredible deputies in Saratoga Springs.
Oh, we have.
And without that, without the employees and staff in City Hall, we are nothing.
Yeah. Oh, we got great workers. I give kudos to anybody that wants to run for commissioner. But the thing is I'd rather have department heads that are there through administrations than a deputy running a department in a good way that is, could be replaced because the member of the opposite party wins.
Yeah, it becomes issues of continuity. Absolutely.
And I think that's where your good salaries have to come into effect, is you pay a full-time employee that's running the department the way it should be run, over a commissioner who is a legislative person and supposedly heads that department. And I think that's why people aren't running for office, like you said. And there is one party in Saratoga who can't grasp the idea that they still would have complete charge in endorsing council people. They're afraid that they don't have that authority anymore. So I think that's why they're so against.
Huh?
Yeah.
I'm not
who? I'm lost. Okay. I'm a little lost.
Let's say I'm chairman. Okay. All right. And Eddie, you want to run for a position. As chairman and as the committee, we can endorse you for that position. All right. There is a certain party opposite the Democratic Party in the city. I won't name that party. That think that they don't have that authority to appoint, endorse you as a alderman. I don't know where their thinking's coming from and who puts their candidates up, but I think...
Well, if they're confused over that, that's fine with me.
Yeah, really. Oh, exactly. Well, I think they are confused with the operation now because they don't, they never appoint anybody to run against the Democrats. So it is kind of goofy, but hey, so is life. So what are you going to do?
Is it time for polka magic?
It almost. That's not. I thought I had.
Can I make one announcement? Though
you can make announcements. Yeah.
So we have a couple very important events coming up in the next couple of weeks. Our Democratic Mayor Meg Kelly is running for re-election, and she has a campaign event on September 23rd, which is a Monday at the Lodge from 5:30 to 7 p.m. And the Democratic Committee is hosting a kickoff event the next day, September 24th, which is Tuesday, at 2 West. We are inviting all of our endorsed candidates and Democratic friends from other committees throughout the county. To join us and talk about our candidates' elections. We'll be distributing literature, voter registration information, and just spending some time chatting with one another. So we hope people can come. Do you want to add anything about that?
Yeah, just, again, really hoping that people will show up. And, again, it's part of the initiative to get more rank-and-file Democrats out. So we're really hoping that ordinary people who would not normally be interested in coming to an event like this will think, hey, it might be a good opportunity for me to get involved, for me to talk to the candidates, and for me to meet some Democrats in the city.
Yep, and I just want to put 2 cents in here. In a city, I don't think you have to be too concerned about voting for a member of the opposite party as you would on a federal government level. You're looking out for what's best for your city, and if you are a member of one party to vote for another party, I think you're doing a service rather than voting a straight line across. I just want to mention some candidates that are running.
Yeah.
You have John Frank, who's an incumbent running for Commissioner of Accounts, who I feel has done a real good job.
I think he's going to get reelected.
I'm 100%
sure.
As we said, Patty Morrison is running for Commissioner of Finance. You have Dylan Moran, who is going to make an excellent commissioner of public works. And you have a public safety candidate, Kendall Hooks. And I think the Democratic Party, and I'm an independent and I'm a conservative in my opinions, but I think the Democratic Party this year has one of the best slates that
Well, and I want to make a correction, though. Kendall Hicks is not an endorsed candidate.
Kennedy is not endorsed. I mentioned
he is running on our line,
right?
But he is not
endorsed. I mentioned
the
candidates who are running, and I will not.
He's not on our slate.
Right. He's
okay.
not on your
so I just
slate.
Make sure that's
but
clear.
I just wanted to mention his name because I.
And
well,
Robin Dalton
anything.
Is running as well for Commissioner of Public Safety.
Well, yes.
She's going to be on your show. Isn't she coming on your show?
She's going to be on my show
weeks?
On the 28th, yes. Okay. But unfortunately, I couldn't get Kendall in here because it filled up fast. So mention the girlfriend to girlfriend event again.
Did county supervisors get a mention?
Yes,
county
Tara
supervisor, Matt Veach and Tara Gaston, who are the incumbents right now, are both running along with a Scott Mittler, I think, who's an independent, if I'm not mistaken.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know what he's running on, or I think he's running on the independent line, but
Tara has an event on her birthday, by the way, October 2nd.
Okay.
That's going to be where?
Yeah, that's going to be at Palette Cafe, which is an amazing venue. It's a co-working space and a cafe where they do incredible cocktails. They're going to do a custom cocktail for Tara, which you definitely want to try.
Okay, excellent. So that's our show today, and I want to wish you continued support to you two and Eddie and Sarah.
Thank you so much, Rick.
And no problem. Have a great weekend. Okay, and everybody, we'll be back next weekend with representatives from Save Morgan Street, which is, if you don't know, it's the group that's opposed to the expansion of the hospital because they live in that area and they're against the rezoning. So, you know, it'll be a great show. So be with us. Have a good week.